Hello, Dominic, and welcome to another edition of the Week Ahead. You have been away for a few weeks, so welcome back first. And second, many things have happened. So while you were away, we got an inflation print above consensus. And today, actually, we got non-farm payroll below consensus, unemployment slightly a little bit above consensus. Wages a little bit below. Now ISM a little bit below, but price paid above. So we are recording at basically just after ISM, so 10 past 3 p.m. London time. So I would say, please give us an update of all your view, what you have changed in your view, what do you think about US economy, Fed, and US election?
Oof. So basically, the risk I thought were endure risk with respect to inflation showed up sooner than I expected. And the inflation risk were really of two kinds. First, as you know, I'm a believer, always dangerous to believe in anything, but you have to believe in something. And in my view, the most sensible model of inflation is that of the BIS, two regime of inflation. In the high inflation regime, economic agent pay a lot of attention to inflation signals. And so when something like energy prices move, they react, and you get a strong correlation between energy and core inflation. So you've had kind of a move up in energy prices, not overwhelming. And the question was how long it would take to translate into higher inflation because the correlation is more medium term. I have a chart that I hope our listeners will check in my latest Fed monitor. So I wasn't quite sure how this would pan out, especially since we'd had about 6 to 9 months of fast declining inflation. So there was this question mark. And then the other risk to the inflation outlook was overheating. I'd been saying for a number of months that the US economy was finely balanced between rebalancing and overheating. And that if you look at indicators of external balance, current account, trade balance, they suggested improvement still. So the economy was still rebalancing, in my view, largely due to the unwinding of the pandemic, changes in supply and demand, because monetary policy tightening is not transmitting much. So I thought the economy was still rebalancing, but that eventually, because of the super loose fiscal policy, we would get into overheating. And the CPI data showed that no, the core inflation, CPI and PCE data shows that core inflation had actually stopped decreasing. And the external balance data showed a worsening, which in my view means the US has moved into overheating. If you look at the GDP data in Q1, you have a big recovery in residential investment driven by a recovery in home prices. It's probably a key driver, but I think it's only going to get worse going forward. So those inflation risks, which I thought were endure risk, actually showed up in Q1. And that's why I changed my view on the Fed. I was expecting them to be able to sneak in a couple, perhaps a few cuts before inflation would stabilize, but they weren't even able to do that. I expect inflation to remain sticky. And so I no longer believe the Fed will be able to cut before the end of the year.
Maybe let me say one thing. So before we go to election and so on, let's remain on the Fed. We saw today, you know, with a lower than expected print on non-farm, but still a very healthy number. So nothing close to recession or nothing close to a material slowdown. The market, of course, has priced a little bit more in July and so on. What do you think should happen for the Fed to cut in July?
Chair Powell told us either a really marked decline in inflation, because he said explicitly, we don't react to 1 or 2 months of data, we need 3 months. So we would need the next 3 months inflation print to be really significantly lower, which I don't see likely, or the US economy is unraveling. I don't know, suddenly Congress sees the light and decides to implement a huge consolidation package, but honestly, there is very little ch chance of that happening, not in an election year. What else? Consumer become very risk averse and start raising the savings rate a lot. Congress gets its act together and the flows of illegal immigration, which in my view is a big driver of the growth we've had, growth without inflation. I actually think that immigration is responsible for the stabilization of housing inflation at very high level. And why it's helping to keep wage growth low and basically reducing the gains of low wage worker relative to high wage worker, which we had seen during the pandemic. Those gains are gone. So this low wage growth is not translating in lower super core inflation. I think largely because we have an economy that's highly concentrated. So when wages go down, instead of passing the lower cost to consumers through lower prices, businesses just, make bigger profits. So in my view, this huge immigration, this supply shock may not be as positive as the Fed thinks. And so if we had the paradox could be that if by a miracle Congress got its act together, because you need changes in the law to stop these huge flows of immigration, this could actually, if by any chance they would manage to do that, this would actually help lower inflation. But I don't see that happening anytime soon.
And maybe let me ask you another question. We have discussed internally a lot about 2025. The reason is that it's also interesting for markets. At the moment, markets are pricing a little bit more than for cut by 2025. Probably, I didn't check today. Probably today we got a little bit more priced in. From rates perspective, I thought the level. Even if I have the same view on sticky inflation, the level could be attractive because by 25, we could argue that there is a chance that maybe we get some recession. But you were basically arguing about the possibility of 2025 being a year in which the Fed could even possibly hike. Of course, it's very far, 25, so I'm not interested really. If they hike or not, who knows? But what is your economic thinking behind that type of scenario that I think would be interesting for our listener?
So basically, growth would continue to remain strong in 2025 because we will see limited consolidation on the fiscal side. If Trump wins, the budget deficit will become even larger. If Biden wins, we will get, tepid, maybe just cosmetic fiscal consolidation, but I don't see a big change in trend, so big support there. Monetary policy, would have to be, tightened significantly to slow growth, which I don't see happening. Monetary policy is going to remain responsive to inflation data. And this surge in immigration, I think that even the Trump administration could struggle to contain it, or it will take time. And while it's, in my view, positive for inflation, it's also very positive for growth. That's why we've had, you know, these huge increases in NFP. The CBO, which is a think tank, it's not a think tank, it's a government agency that scores the impact of laws on the budget and on government spending. You know, they've done some studies on immigration, and based on those studies, it looks like NFP are going out two times to three times larger than without immigration, sustainable NFP. So I can see the driver of strong growth extending into next year. And with strong growth, if energy prices remain stable, you know, given that the US economy is going in, private demand is sliding into overheating. I mean, you have a government that's spending gobs of money on industrial policy, giving subsidies, literally 100 billions in subsidies to industry every year. And what you are seeing is a huge increase in manufacturing construction, but no increase in equipment. So we are only in the early stages of this boom, where the recipients of subsidies are building huge foundries, factories, but they still have to buy the equipment and to hire the worker. And that means private business demand is only going to increase. And so if I look at 2025 on balance, based on current information, I see the overheating more likely to increase than not. And I agree with you that the end game is a recession. But I think to get to the recession, we have to get to a level of inflation that's politically unacceptable, and a policy reaction from the Fed, and possibly from Congress. So that's the framework.
Thank you. Thank you very
Yeah.
much. Very interesting. Thanks. So maybe a couple of minutes at the moment, looking at the election, what would you like to share? Do you have any particular view, any particular bias, who is going to win, whatever you want to share on the election?
So I am trying to have as few biases as I can. If you look at the data, you see a growing divergence between the poll and the betting market. The betting market are more and more confident of Biden victory. While if you look at the polls, it's still very ambiguous, especially in swing states. So I think we're still in the balance. I think it's still an election that's likely to get decided with a few hundred thousand votes in a few counties. So I can't take a view. But what I've changed my mind actually is that I'm thinking a Trump administration may not be as inflationary as I was thinking initially. Initially, I was thinking, you know, we would spend, cut immigration, raise tariff. But I think the other side of the equation is that there is going to be liberalized deregulation. And while deregulation is terrible for the environment, it's also helping to lower business costs. So we could have actually a supply response, a positive supply response to the initial measures of a Trump administration. I also think that if Trump wins, the equity market initially will react positively because deregulation, lower taxes, businesses will love it. So these are my thoughts. Not enough data to have a strong view on which side is likely to win.
Fair enough. No, absolutely. Thank you for this. Maybe next week, what are the main events, main data or Fed speaker you're gonna pay particularly attention?
We get a bit of respite next week after this super busy week. Most important data, the SLOOS, which is the Fed Survey of Senior Loan Officers, credit practices. I can never quite remember the whole acronym, but basically it's going to show continued relaxation of credit criteria, basically more firms tightening than easing credit standard, but a smaller margin. And I think continued recovery in demand for bank credit, which is yet another example of the lack of transmission of monetary policy. And then we will have the University of Michigan consumer confidence. So there is a relationship between this series and consumption of durable. The relationship broke down a little bit. It's coming back. But the relationship is very loose, as I will show in my note on immigration. What explains the strength in durables consumption is actually immigration. I mean, I have a few striking charts I can't wait to share with our listeners. The more interesting data in that release will be inflation expectations. You know, the Fed mantra is that inflation expectations are well anchored no matter what happens to the data. So for sure, long-term inflation expectations have not moved. In the Michigan survey, have not moved much. They are significantly higher than before the pandemic, but obviously that's not constraining the Fed in its with its policy of wait and see. In terms of speakers, we have quite a few, including Williams, and of course, I will be commenting on them on our Bloomberg chat. But you know, no surprise here, they are all going to repeat Chair Powell's message. You know, we need more confidence. So hopefully we get a break next week. I guess that's what I'm saying.
So okay, I would summarize that today we got some data that was a bit below consensus, for sure, fully in expectation of soft landing. But on the other side, as you said, there are reason to believe that cuts are still far, far away. So thank you for that. Let me remind our listener that, of course, any interest in macro, they can see our website. We can be contact on our website. And just to mention to this week, we had quite interesting piece written by our colleagues. So we had Bilal that, as always, writes very interesting pieces before important releases of data. So a little bit of a guide before the data is released, what to expect in terms of market moves and so on. Then we have a release again of our China growth tracker that clients really like a lot. On the other side, we have the preview of Bank of England from Henry. And also another very interesting piece from Henry about US Treasury auction. And also the supply of gilts with his view about gilt supply in 24 and in 25. Then of course we had other pieces from our emerging market team, Mirtha, Caroline, and all the others. So still we have been publishing quite a few important pieces. Dominic have been away, so recently she didn't publish much, but discussing with her, she has already a lot of new topics in her pipeline. So I would say I wish you a fantastic weekend, Dominic. Welcome back. Many people
Thank you.
were asking about you and reading your pieces. So now you are back and you can basically again.
Thank you, Antonio. It feels really good to be back and to
Yes.
reconnect with everybody.
Yeah, so this is great. Okay, thank you very much, and have a good weekend to all our listeners. Thank you. Thank you. Bye bye.
Perfect.